Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. Issue 1 on the November 6th statewide ballot would reduce penalties for drug possession in favor of treatment, and it would enable those now serving time for drug possession a chance to get out of prison early. Coming up, we'll hear from the chief lobbyist for the ACLU of Ohio, which supports Issue 1. Also, the chief justice of the Ohio Supreme Court will join us to talk about why she opposes the proposed constitutional amendment. Joining us now is Cincinnati Enquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome to the show, Jesse.
Thanks for having me.
A lot has been made of the issue of the drug fentanyl. We hear it a lot in the anti-Issue 1 ads that are leveled at different candidates that support it. What's the deal with the fentanyl piece?
Well, essentially, fentanyl, for people who might be less aware, is a very powerful opioid. It's more powerful than heroin or morphine, and it is a huge problem in Ohio right now. In Cincinnati alone, it is affiliated with most of our overdoses there in Hamilton County. And so the issue is that the Ohio Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice, has brought up repeatedly is that just shy of 20 grams of fentanyl would be considered as a misdemeanor if you were found with it as drug possession.
Under Issue 1,
mm-hmm. if it were to pass. Mm-hmm. And so that is a concern because the amount of doses of that could, you know, cause overdoses for up to 10,000 people. Supporters of Issue 1 would say that anyone with that amount of fentanyl would be charged with trafficking regardless of dealing, as opposed to simple possession, which is what would be reduced. The penalties would be reduced under Issue 1.
All right. So even though Issue 1 would reduce penalties, prosecutors would still have the latitude to charge them with trafficking with that amount of fentanyl.
Yeah, that's what supporters are saying, is if you have that much of fentanyl, you are not using it for personal use, and that could be charged as trafficking as opposed to possession. Prosecutors, you know, are saying that they would still like that authority to be able to charge it as possession, and that is something that they would lose under Issue 1.
Huh. All right. So the point being that it's so powerful that anybody who has that much is using it, is trafficking it, because they couldn't use it personally.
That's the argument.
Okay. Where's the main fault line in support for Issue 1? What is the main objection? Is it the fentanyl piece, or is it something else?
Well, I think the fentanyl is certainly compelling because of just the concern that that much fentanyl could be a misdemeanor under drug possession charges. The other thing that comes up frequently is drug courts. And drug courts work like if you're charged with a drug offense, then the judge could say, hey, let's do some treatment or do some counseling. And if you do those things, we won't send you to prison. Well, if, you know, you can no longer send someone to prison because of the fourth and fifth degree felonies are now being charged as misdemeanors, you're losing a little bit of that stick in the carrot and stick approach that drug courts have used successfully. And a similar initiative passed in California, and they did see some reduction in drug court usage.
Does every county have a drug court, though?
Not all counties have them, but they were a kind of popular reaction to the desire to treat drug addicts as people with a disease and treat addiction as a disease and then punish those who are selling drugs more severely.
Who's backing the proposed constitutional amendment? I'm going to be talking to the chief lobbyist of the ACLU coming up later in the program, but there's money behind this, right?
Yes. So some of the groups that are putting money towards Issue 1 are Mark Zuckerberg of Facebook, founder of fame. His kind of advocacy arm has donated some money to this. Also, George Soros, who's a infamous or famous, depending on what party you're on, Democratic fundraiser, has put some money towards this. People who are supporting Issue 1 are the Democratic nominee for governor, Rich Cordray, and, you know, various Democratic figures, groups like the ACLU are supporting it. And then the opponents are folks like Mike DeWine has come out strongly against it, and he's the Republican running for governor. Pretty much the entire slate of GOP statewide candidates have come out against it. Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor has been, you know, very opposed and very vocal in her opposition to this particular ballot initiative.
Going back to the fentanyl issue for one sec, why didn't the authors of Issue 1 provide for the fentanyl question?
So it's kind of technical. Basically, the way they wrote this ballot initiative is the laws that were on the book as of January 1st, 2018 are the laws that, you know, Issue 1 would draw back on. And at that time, fentanyl was punished less severely. It was scheduled as a Schedule 2 drug, which is a less serious version, whereas things like heroin and even marijuana were Schedule 1 drugs under Ohio law. Ohio lawmakers actually passed legislation, John Kasich signed it, to penalize fentanyl more severely, to change it to that Schedule 1 drug under Ohio law. But that won't take effect until October 31st. And Issue 1 is tied back to the laws that were on the books on January 1st. So I don't know if they just didn't think about that or if they, there wasn't some concern about it at the time. I'm not sure.
Because it's a constitutional amendment or a proposed constitutional amendment, if it was passed, you can't tweak it very easily. It always has to go back to the ballot for changes.
It is challenging to tweak. It is more challenging to tweak constitutional amendments than it is to change state laws, which are passed by the lawmakers that we all send to Columbus. It is something that you could put back on the ballot initiative to do some tweaks. It's possible that lawmakers could adjust, like, the definition of trafficking to make some changes to smooth out the rough edges on this. But it is harder than if you just passed a state law.
And so far, the Ohio General Assembly, which is entirely controlled by Republicans, hasn't been interested in legislation that addresses the core issue, which is the prison overcrowding and the lack of treatment for addicts, right?
Yeah, that is one of the reasons that Issue 1 is before voters in the fall. The group that Stephen Johnson Grove from the Cincinnati area, who wrote this ballot initiative, was part of task force, was part of panels that were looking at ways to reduce the prison population. And they put forth proposals, and then those proposals really didn't go anywhere. And so there was a sense of frustration with the state lawmakers that they weren't willing to address this issue. And so, like so many other issues before them, they took it to the ballot.
What is the what about Ohio's prison overcrowding problem? What does it rank, like, second or fourth in the country?
You know, I am not 100% sure on that, so I would hate to say, but I know we have, you know, close to 50,000 people in prison. It has grown dramatically over recent years. Through various trends in Ohio lawmaking, we've wanted to be tougher on crime, and there were mandatory minimums set up for certain crimes. There are ways to enhance crimes, like if it was done near a child or near a school, you're going to get a stricter penalty for that. And so just over the years, there's been various laws passed to, you know, increase the prison population or really to punish crimes more severely, which the result of that is to increase the prison population.
Another issue is treatment. Why, if there's so many people in prison for low-level drug offenses, why aren't they getting treatment in prison? Isn't that part of what prison does?
Well, it is called the Ohio Department of Rehabilitation and Corrections, so in theory there should be some rehabilitation part of it. I know there are treatment options in prison, but largely it's more expensive and less effective than getting treatment out in the community. And as far as how many people this would actually affect, I think there's something like 2,600 people in Ohio's prison system right now for drug possession. And some of that might be higher level drug possession. We're kind of waiting on the prison system for some more exact numbers, but that's what folks who are who are looking at this ballot initiative, they suspect this could reduce the prison population by about 10,000 people. And that is a combination of a few different things that issue does. One is this reduction in penalties for drug possession, but other things are, you know, being able to get out of prison earlier if you complete educational or treatment programs, and also sending fewer people to prison for probation violations if it's not a new crime. So something like you miss your meeting with your probation officer would not be something you could be sent to prison for, as long as it isn't like you committed a new robbery or you know, drug dealing offense.
Opponents of Issue 1 have said it's going to turn drug dealers back out on the streets. Aren't most of them going to be out back out on the street anyway?
I mean, eventually drug trafficking is going, the sentences are just not that long that these people are not going to be back out on the streets in general. So eventually people are going to be back on the streets. Perhaps they may be back for drug possession a little bit earlier under this. But proponents would say, you know, that's a good thing because that's where they can get treatment
instead of in prison. Some local government officials have said they're worried that the onus for the treatment would be thrust onto local governments, which have already taken big hits in the last 10 or so years, or mostly the last 8 years, from a local government fund being cut at the state level. What about that? Is that a real thing?
So basically felony cases are, you send people who are convicted of felony cases to the state prisons, and you send those who are convicted of misdemeanor offenses, which is what these drug possession charges would become, to county jails. And so county jails could potentially be dealing with more of these people who were previously sent to prison. There has been a push recently in Ohio to send more low-level fourth and fifth degree felony offenders to county jails in general. So this is something that's already happening and that county jails are already concerned about as far as overcrowding goes.
How does Issue 1 deal with the issue of funding for treatment? Is it automatic? I mean, so we have 10,000 fewer inmates in our state prisons. That saves the state X amount of money. The Issue 1 says should go to treatment. How would that work?
So essentially, they would take the money and divide it up. Some of it would go to treatment. Some of it would go to implementation of this law. So helping the counties adjust to more people or just a bigger caseload. And I believe the way it's written is it would be like grants that would be given back to the local community.
My guest is Jesse Ballmer. She's state government reporter for the Cincinnati Enquirer. We're talking about Issue 1 today. Coming up, we're going to hear from the ACLU's chief lobbyist, Gary Daniels, and would they support Issue 1? Coming up later on in the program, we'll hear from the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, who opposes Issue 1. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org, or you can check out the Facebook page, the All Sides with Ann Fisher Facebook page. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Issue 1 on the November 6th statewide ballot would reclassify drug possession as a misdemeanor and prohibit jail time until a third offense over the course of 2 years. The idea is to get more treatment for addicts and lower the prison population in Ohio. Coming up, we're going to hear from the Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, who opposes Issue 1. Still with us is Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Balmert. And joining us now is Gary Daniels of ACLU Ohio, which endorses the constitutional amendment. Welcome back, Gary.
Thank you, Ann. Always a pleasure.
Opponents say that such a constitutional amendment would make it impossible to tweak the law without going back to the ballot, which is costly and complicated. What about that criticism that arises from many ballot issues?
Well, I mean, you know, supporters of Issue 1, many of us understand that a ballot initiative for some people is not the preferred way to go around this. But and I can tell you as a lobbyist the past 10 years in the General Assembly over at the State House, I've been dealing with lawmakers over the years, in-person meetings, testimony on various bills, and there is just simply no interest in our State House for changing the drug laws. The last time they accomplished any kind of what can be considered meaningful reform was House Bill 86, which was enacted 7 years ago, almost to the day. And we were told at that point that would be step one. There would be more coming. But here we are 7 years later, and a lot has happened in 7 years. Opiates have become an incredible problem here. Ohio is among the leading states in overdoses and overdose deaths. And so for the General Assembly to continue on with business as usual, with no interest in changing what they're doing. And in fact, when they have an opportunity, making things worse by perpetuating the war on drugs through additional legislation, frustration obviously arises, and it leads to 700,000 people across Ohio signing petitions, getting this on the ballot, and saying, look, enough is enough. State House legislators, if you're not going to do your job, if you're not going to address this problem whatsoever, then it's up to the people to do it. So that's the reason for the ballot initiative.
Opponents also say that Issue 1, if enacted by the voters, would hamstring specialty drug court judges who use the threat of prison to get people into treatment or back into school, getting their GED, that kind of a thing.
Drug courts obviously play a role in helping Ohioans out, but there's nothing in Issue 1 that's going to really affect drug courts. Drug courts can still exist. In fact, it appears they're going to be able to apply for grant money, if they so wish, for people who will continue with misdemeanor offenses that could appear before them with drug courts. But drug courts could also be a whole lot more effective in Ohio. The criteria for getting into drug courts, it's not a whole lot of people. These drug courts aren't graduating a whole lot of people in Ohio. And so while they have a role with regard to drug problems in Ohio, right now it's a small impact. It's a small but welcome impact, but we need so much more.
And you don't think, and they're saying that you're saying Issue 1 wouldn't affect even that small role.
Well, I think the judge's concern is that because
it takes away that carrot and stick approach.
Yeah, because the possession would now be a misdemeanor instead of a felony, and they would be seeing less people in court. It's less people to potentially get into drug court, but you know, their way of thinking is that it continues to be that you can arrest and convict your way out of this problem. And that's where the drug courts come in, is that it's part of the overall criminal justice system. Well, look, we've been trying to arrest and convict our way out of this problem for 40 years. And what has it gotten us in Ohio? It's gotten us prisons that have been overcrowded since I started with the ACLU of Ohio back in 1995. And before then, what we have now is a status quo that is simply not working. So I am confident that Ohioans, with the passage of Issue 1, we can find other ways to get people into drug treatment and get them the help they need without that hammer of we're going to arrest you, we're going to convict you, we're going to throw you into prison.
I always wonder about the issue, and I'm not quite sure how to frame the question, but the fact that drug courts aren't available in every county. So it seems like the way the law is applied and the way laws are applied are unequal depending on where you live.
Right, and that's part of the frustration that has led to issue one, is that Ohio does do some truly good things with regard to drug problems and drug addiction in this state. The problem is that the things that we do here, we don't do nearly enough of. So when you're talking about the availability of treatment, which issue one would make it more available, you're talking about all kinds of areas in this state, particularly rural areas, where people have to wait days, they have to wait weeks, sometimes months to get into treatment to help with their problems. And that's just simply in 2018, with the huge drug problems that this state has and the huge over-incarceration problems that this state has. That's just simply not acceptable anymore. What we have to do is we have to do something different. Other states are doing this right now. This is not something that's, you know, some sort of radical change. It would not solve all of Ohio's problems, but opponents are out there arguing for the status quo. They're arguing for continuing a war on drugs that is an absolute failure by any objective measure. And they're saying, no, look, we should be doing more of the same. But look, you've had 40 years to work this out, and it's failed. And the people of Ohio are tired of it, and that's why they're supporting issue one.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about issue one this hour. You're listening to Gary Daniels. He's chief lobbyist for the ACLU Ohio. Also with us, Jesse Ballmert, Cincinnati Enquirer, state government reporter. If you have a question or comment, you can give us a call, 614-292-8513. Let's see. John in Dublin, you're on the air. Hi, John.
Hi, Ann. I'm well aware of the drug problem in Ohio because I'm a medical professional and see it every week. The one question I have is what percentage, if it's known from other states, what percentage of those who are offered drug treatment go into it and successfully complete so? I guess my concern is, you know, what is the failure rate and, of course, the cost of the program to all citizens?
Or another way to look at it is what gets people into treatment if not the threat of prison? Gary Daniels?
Well, what's clear in Ohio here is I don't know the all of the statistics
of
treatment
state, yeah.
And all those other things that falls outside of sort of, you know, the ACLU of Ohio's look at and purview with this particular issue. But what I do know is the war on drugs is the driving factor of people into prison. It's what sends the most people to prison here in Ohio. It's double the national average. And so, Ohio is not only doing things wrong, we're doing things wrong way out of whack with the rest of the state. And I'm confident that if we can just remove ourselves from this idea that it absolutely requires the threat of prison or jail to get people into treatment, because that's not true for an awful lot of people out there. And when we throw people into prison as a result, they come out worse than they went in. You get people that go in with felony convictions, and as so many people here in Ohio know, particularly communities of color, which have borne the brunt of this for a number of years. Good luck getting a good paying or even a decent job with a felony conviction. Good luck with getting housing. Good luck with getting education. We churn out about 25,000 people per year in Ohio's state prisons.
They get
out of prison, right, with felony records. And so what happens then is some of them, they're unable to get that education, that housing, the employment. It leads them, some of them, back to addiction. It just continues to perpetuate these problems over time. And again, issue one represents a new and different way of doing things here in Ohio that is much, much needed.
Ohio Prosecuting Attorneys Association says that the amendment may prevent felony charges for traffickers who deliberately deal in small amounts to assert simple possession.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, opponents, you know, one of their big arguments against issue one is the fentanyl issue. And look, let's be clear here. If fentanyl was written out of issue one, it's not like the opponents would say, well, that's taken care of. Let's all get behind issue one. If it wasn't fentanyl, it would be heroin. If it wasn't heroin, it would be cocaine. It would be something different, but they've seized onto the fentanyl issue. And fentanyl, the type of drug it is, it's not like there's people on street corners or going around driving around Ohio with pure fentanyl. The nature of fentanyl is it's an extremely extremely dangerous substance. Nobody is buying pure fentanyl to use or possess. The very nature of having fentanyl is so that it can be involved in the trafficking environment because it's added to other drugs. You do pure fentanyl or you get exposed to pure fentanyl, you're dead, quite literally, because it's such a dangerous substance. So, you know, what this might require is, you know, who knows, an extra step by prosecutors to prove that this fentanyl is being used for trafficking, which issue one does not address whatsoever. It's only for possession offenses. But I find it hard to believe that these prosecutors can't be out there busting these people for trafficking offenses because of the very nature of fentanyl and how it's used.
Emily in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Emily.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to say that one thing I've heard that makes me really support issue one is that one of the reasons this needs to be a constitutional amendment as opposed to an act of the legislature is so that it can be retroactive, so that people who were convicted of these possession felonies 20 years ago, who are prevented from getting jobs because of the question, have you ever been convicted of a felony? You know, they can't volunteer at their kid's school, that kind of thing, that they'd be able to have those reclassified as misdemeanors and be able to participate more fully in the community.
And that's what you were talking about, Gary?
Yeah, that's one of the great things about while a lot of people with issue one are concentrating on the issue of drug possession and turning those lower level drug possession offenses into misdemeanors, because this wouldn't be all possession offenses, let's mm-hmm. be clear. But it does a variety of other things, including, as the caller points out, it makes it potentially retroactive for people who have been charged with these offenses in the past, where they will be able to petition a court and go before a judge and say, hey, look, you know, I think with my particular circumstances, I should get the relief of issue one in a retroactive way. It's not automatic. There's still judicial oversight for this. A judge has to sign off on this and look at what these people have been doing individually. But issue one encompasses more aspects to this overall problem than just the possession offenses.
Is there an estimate about Jesse Balmer, about how many people would be affected by this who are in prison now, and whether or not there would be the resources for the administration of that?
Well, the best estimate that's been made so far was by a think tank group that estimates about 10,000 people would be reduced from the prison population because of that. And that includes the people who would not be going to prison because drug possession would be a lower offense. That includes people who could have prison time reduced because they are taking educational courses or treatment. Up to 25% of their sentence could be reduced, except if it's murder or child molestation or I believe rape is the other exception. And then the other group is people who wouldn't be sent to prison because of probation violations that are not new crimes. So those are the three areas that they think it adds up to 10,000 is their estimate. I know the state is required to put out an estimate as well on ballot initiatives and the costs and the effects of those. And I anticipate that will be out soon.
I'm wondering about how with issue one, lowering the charges or reclassifying possession from a felony to a misdemeanor changes how many people get into treatment in Ohio and how that's going to actually happen.
Well, one of the things, Anne, that issue one does is it, as has been said on the program today, is it takes the savings realized and it diverts a lot of that back into treatment for people, making it more available across Ohio. Will it be so much again that it solves the problem? Personally, I think that's doubtful because there is so much need out there. So, you know, I want to caution people. Issue one, again, doesn't solve every problem out there, but it is several steps towards making Ohio much better. You know, here in Ohio, we've got this big rainy day fund that we have just replenished. But nobody is talking about using it for treatment whatsoever. There's a real disconnect between the legislature and their constituents in this regard.
You know, Jesse Balmer, we know that lawmakers, candidates, let's just say it, the Republicans control the Ohio General Assembly. We know they acknowledge the opioid crisis. We know that they have to pay the bill when it comes to cover the cost of our overcrowded prisons. Gary Daniels is saying that they don't take up these issues and they won't reform sentencing laws anyway. Is that the case?
Well, so here's the balance, is everyone wants drug addicts to get treatment, and everyone wants those big bad drug dealers to be punished. And lawmakers don't want to go back to their district and say, we let someone who's dealing fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamines back on the streets. And that's really the concern. So that's kind of where the balance comes in, I think. And it is challenging to craft laws that address both of those issues simultaneously.
And Anne, I'll tell you, I mean, you know, having done this for 10 years in the State House and worked on every single bill involving drug policy, you know, I can tell you firsthand about not only the inaction of the legislature, but actively making things worse when they get a chance. And here's just another example. A couple of years ago, Ohio kicked off this you know, blue ribbon panel called the Ohio Criminal Justice Recodification Committee to take a look at Ohio's criminal laws and make recommendations to make things better is the idea. The Recodification Committee, made up of judges, of prosecutors, of law enforcement officials, police, criminal defense attorneys, and even legislators, issued their recommendations, I think it was about a year and a half ago, modest a recommendation of, okay, so if it's a fourth-degree felony, let's make it a fifth-degree felony. If it's a fifth-degree felony, let's make it a first-degree misdemeanor. So basically, let's kick down all the offenses of one level. And drug crimes were just a part of what they were addressing. Since they have made those recommendations to the General Assembly about a year and a half ago, not one single bill by any legislator has been introduced reflecting the recommendations of the committee that they set up to make these recommendations to them. This, you know, wait-and-see approach, maybe the legislature will eventually come around. It has not worked for the last 7 years since they passed House Bill 86. It hasn't worked before then, and Ohioans simply can't wait any longer.
Okay. Chris in Columbus, you're on the air. Hi, Chris.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
So I had a question. A previous caller mentioned the reason they are supporting Issue 1 is that because it is a constitutional amendment, it's able to be retroactive. But my question is, if the amendment was simply statutory and passed by the General Assembly, would that also not be able to be retroactive? I guess I'm questioning whether or not it has to be constitutional to be retroactive.
Yeah, I'm unsure in the grand scheme, Anne, of you know, what passes constitutional muster as far as retroactivity or not. Clearly, some stuff is acceptable to be retroactive. Other stuff is not. If I had a law clerk in a week, I could get you an answer back. But, you know, this is one part and a very welcome part of Issue 1. And again, it's being done as a ballot initiative because at this point, at least 700,000, 730,000 Ohioans thought that there was no choice to do otherwise when they looked at their elected officials who were doing nothing about this. So, you know, again, I understand some people might be hesitant because it's a constitutional amendment, but really the choice at this point is take this extremely useful and helpful and forward-thinking ballot initiative or take absolutely nothing. Because even the people that are out there complaining about Issue 1, where are their plans? What are they talking about doing? They say, oh, well, we do need criminal justice reform. Okay, so where is it? Where is your detailed plan? It's not enough any longer to just, for those few people who promise criminal justice reform, that's not enough. We need to see action. And because we've seen none, we have Issue 1.
Gary Daniels, chief lobbyist for ACLU Ohio, which supports Issue 1. Thanks for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Anne. Always appreciate it on our end, too.
We will be right back and continue our conversation about Issue 1. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. Issue 1 on the November 6th statewide ballot would reclassify drug possession as a misdemeanor and prohibit jail time until a third offense within the course of 2 years. The idea is to get more treatment for addicts and lower the prison population in Ohio. We just heard from Gary Daniels of ACLU Ohio, which endorses the constitutional amendment. Still with us is Cincinnati Inquirer state government reporter Jesse Balmert. Joining us is Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, who opposes Issue 1. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Opponents have said that this will make prosecutors' jobs harder because they won't be able to charge defendants with possession and send them to prison. Instead, they'll have to prove trafficking to get them to prison.
I think there is a conflated perception here about trafficking in possession. Mm-hmm. The law on trafficking doesn't change. In order to prove trafficking or charge someone with trafficking and get a conviction, there are certain elements that have to be present. One is knowingly have the product, whatever it is, the drug, with intent to sell or distribute. Mm-hmm. And there has to be actual indicia of intent to sell or traffic. It's not mere volume. And that is what the misconception is and that is being perpetuated by the other side. When I talk about 19 grams of fentanyl, which can kill, not just overdose, but kill 10,000 people, and they say, oh, that's trafficking any day of the week, not unless the law enforcement has the evidence that they knowingly intended to sell or distribute that drug, or there's indicia of distribution, such as packaging into, I say, bite-sized pieces, so that they can, sell those little amounts of the drug individually.
Yeah, but I mean, just having possession of that much fentanyl is so dangerous.
Of course, it is. That's my point.
But exactly. But logically, why would any one individual have that for personal possession? Wouldn't it automatically be a trafficking situation?
You can't presume that. There are elements that have to be proven, and that's in the Ohio law, the statute. And if you don't have that, oftentimes, you know, somebody can have even larger quantities of a drug, and they're just caught with it. They're not caught offering it for sale. There's no confidential informant. There's no wire. There's no exchange or distribution. And let me just, for example, there's certain volume amounts that will get you an F1, an F2, or an F3, mm-hmm. or an F4, or an F5. Those are possession charges. So what I'm telling you is the amount that it takes to get an felony one, if you say, or the other side would say, well, just sheer volume is going to get you trafficking, we wouldn't have felony one possession charges.
If fentanyl wasn't an issue, which it wasn't a year ago, we didn't know much. You know, it's been out there. But just say hypothetically, Chief, if it wasn't an issue, would you still be opposed to Issue 1?
I would be opposed to Issue 1 for a variety of reasons.
Right.
It's a constitutional amendment.
Right.
That is just so cumbersome and so inappropriate. It is an extremely vague and poorly drafted constitutional amendment. There is no precision in it. And it is not detailed. It is impossible to pass enough statutes to fix what is wrong with it, with the constitutional amendment.
And okay,
that's my
And Gary
procedural.
Daniels of the ACLU said there wouldn't need to be an issue one if Ohio General Assembly would do its job and address the issues of overcrowding and inappropriate imprisonment of people who are addicts and not traffickers.
Well, I know that that's his opinion.
I know.
And I do believe that there is there is room for 39,000 inmates in Ohio institutions, Department of Correction institutions, and I believe that there's 49,000 in there. Okay. Of the 10,000 overage, let's just, say, drug offenses in the institution right now are less than 15% of the inmates in those institutions. So that's not going to solve your overcrowding problem, because those drug offenses are, again, anyone from a felony one to a felony five. Now, there is a presumption that felony fours and fives will not go to prison. That is in the law, that a felony four or five, if it's a drug offense or any other felony.
Unless there is some kind of probation violation.
No, no. Let me just start. So that is a presumption in the law. We also have a program called TCAP, which I'm sure you're familiar with. That is the Department of Rehab and Corrections funneling money into local communities to keep fours and fives in the community on probation in the local counties. All right. So that's another progress that has been made. When they say that the legislature has done nothing in the last, I think I heard 40 years, that's just not true. Again, we have TCAP. We have the presumption against incarceration. Let's talk about Medicaid expansion. We could not treat the people who are abusing substances, have a substance abuse disorder in this state if we didn't have Medicaid expansion. And thank God we do. So, again, that's legislative action. We have about 250 specialized dockets. Over 170 are qualified as or are labeled as drug courts. But let's be honest, all the specialized dockets deal with some sort of substance abuse disorder.
Right.
We have coming into Ohio here and in the pipeline over the next year, over $112 million that has been granted to Ohio to expand our treatment capacity. And that's from the Department of Justice.
Okay, $112 million, I'd take it if someone gave it to me. But that's not a lot of money when you talk about spreading over a state of 8 million people with the opioid addiction problems we have today.
Well, it's
and the 170 drug courts, the 250 specialty courts, and I think you're absolutely right. They mostly revolve around the universe of drug addiction or drug abuse. Those are mostly those aren't spread around equally across the state. And I ask Gary Daniels the same thing: is it fair that some people get to live in a place where there's a specialty drug court and others don't, and they don't benefit from something like that? Is that fair in a state like Ohio?
It's all about resources,
right?
Okay. And the problem in some of the counties that don't have specialized dockets is not that they're not, or I shouldn't say it's not the problem, but the perception is, well, they're not treating their defendants. And that's not true. As I said, there's a presumption against incarceration for these low-level drug offenses, and they do have to have a component on probation of drug treatment. That is, the component that any judge that puts someone who is addicted, who is a substance abuser, on probation. But what's the problem with issue one is, if I am a probationer and I have one of my conditions of probation is drug treatment, let's say drug treatment, I have to get my GED and I have to find a job, okay? And I come back in 2 months for a status with the judge, and the judge says, how's that GED working out for you? I didn't get around to signing up. How's your treatment? I haven't gotten there yet. And have you gotten a job? No, I just haven't looked. Okay, what's the judge to do? Nothing. You can't even put that person in jail for 3 days to wake them up. That's the problem with issue one.
The point's been made already this hour that the Ohio prison system's churning out 25,000 inmates a year.
I don't know if that's an accurate
point. Being though that none of them, very few of them, all things being equal, are going to be in prison for life. Most prison inmates are back on the street with a felony now. They're not going to be able to get a decent job. There are some places that will take them, but all things being equal, it's not the case. They probably haven't gotten necessarily treatment because so much of the process of incarceration is getting enrolled in incarceration and then getting out. There's just not a lot of time. Most treatment takes several months, if not years, and there's not time while you're in the system to be treated. I mean, aren't we already just churning out people that with less potential than they went in with when they're coming out with a felony?
Well, yes, it's unfortunate for anybody to have a felony on their record. There's ways to expunge felonies on your record as well as misdemeanors. I would be in favor of minimizing the amount of time that it would take to expunge a felony.
Making it easier.
Making it easier, yes. Right now it's 3 years after you complete your probation, and you can have your felony expunged, and I think it's 1 year for a misdemeanor. You know, I can see collapsing those numbers, that amount of time. Absolutely. But, you know, when you talk about these low-level drug offenders in prison, over the last 5 years, that population has decreased by 3% in the institution without measures other than what I talked about before as being the law now for courts and with regards to sentencing. And the drug offenses in prison are, again, all classified as drug offenses. Doesn't matter if it's a 4 or 5 or a more serious, because of volume of drugs, a 1, 2, or 3. So those numbers, you can't ferret out the 4s and 5s.
At least 11 states as of last January have lowered some drug possession crimes from a felony to a misdemeanor. That's according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. The problems envisioned from Issue 1 so far haven't been reported in those states at any level that's noticeable so far.
You want to know what the big difference is between those 11 or 12 states and Issue 1?
Okay.
Each one of those states, the judges retained the ability to incarcerate in jail a probationer, a drug court participant that needs to go, as I said, to for 1 day, 2 day, 3 day in county, in the locality, so that they understand the consequences of not of being non-compliant. And that is a huge difference, because Issue 1, in essence, neuters judges when it comes to their ability to deal with probationers, with drug court. You won't have people going to drug court. Why would someone go to an intensive program like drug court for a year or 18 months, sometimes longer, where you have the court monitoring what you're doing and you have your treatment team that is, you know, monitoring what you're doing and, you know, helping you, when you have a misdemeanor and you can say, you know what, I'll just take the probation of the misdemeanor, which is minimal, and I'll get you off my back. Why would I go to drug court?
If Issue 1 doesn't pass, are you going to put any energy like you have in defeating Issue 1 toward changing the system in a way that you do feel comfortable with?
There's already initiatives out there that would be that have come together. I think Prosecutor Ron O'Brien and Zach Klein from the
Athens County Prosecutor is also
The Athens County Prosecutor has a program that he has proposed. So there's models out there to have legislation drafted to meet those models. But again, here's the beauty of something like that. Is you're going to have dialogue, you're going to have discussion, you're going to be in the legislature, you're going to have hearings, you're going to talk to people who are going to be affected by this change in the statute. And if it is not exactly the right fit, you'll be nimble enough to change it. And you don't have that with this constitutional amendment.
Jesse Balmer, any indication that the Ohio General Assembly is interested in taking up, say, the O'Brien Klein proposal out of Franklin County or the Athens County proposal?
You know, I have not. They're not in session right now.
That's right.
And so I don't know if they've responded specifically to the proposals from the folks in Columbus or to the Athens County prosecutors. But I know both Ohio governor candidates are talking to those folks about those plans and are interested in hearing more. So I wouldn't be surprised if those are topics that do come up regardless of what happens with Issue 1.
You know, could I just clarify something I heard a little earlier? A caller said that she supports it because it's a constitutional amendment for the reason that that makes it retroactive. You can have,
it was unclear that that was the case.
Okay. I'd like to clear it up for you. Statutes can be, if the legislature denotes them as being retroactive, they are retroactive.
Okay. But not a constitutional amendment necessarily.
You don't have to have a constitution. Okay. No, I'm talking statutorily.
Right. Yeah. It could be done either way. And the way it's worded is they could go to a judge and request that this be, you know, reduced from a felony to a misdemeanor.
Okay. Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, thank you so much for joining us today. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Jesse Ballmert, Cincinnati Enquirer, state government reporter, thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks to everybody else. Don't forget, early voting is starting now. Yeah, early voting starts today. So hopefully you've learned something, and I appreciate your attention. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.